Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Peter and Steve in Ibiza. Yeah, heads in the air. Woo. Steve, you're 38 for heaven's sake. Grow up. What are you doing?
I am in an adults-only hotel, if that makes a difference, so, you know.
Oh, I say, adults-only. What does that mean? Well, Steve, what are you talking about? Surely most young kids who go to Ibiza are above 18, yeah? I'd be worried if you were in a kids-only hotel. I think it's health and safety gone crazy there. But I'm in an adults-only. So what are you doing in Ibiza, Steve? Like I said, you know.
It's a stag weekend, so.
Yeah. Oh yes, you did mention this. How's it gone? It's been good.
Do you know what? I was actually dreading it a little bit. I thought it was going to be a bit more raucous, but it's actually quite tame, actually.
Just, yeah, because you're 38 years old now.
Yeah, I remind you, you're 38, Steve. So Steve said that I could do around 12. He said 12 o'clock. He said, okay, cool. He said, I've just got to. This was like 5 to 11 or 10 to 11. He said, I've just got to order my club sandwich. It may take a while to get here. I said, well, how long is it going to take? You've got an hour and 10 minutes. And then he just thought you had to wolf it down. I said, Steve, he doesn't know what time zone he's in, Pete. What chance have we got? We're talking about investing in stocks and shares. Steve can't even get his head around what time zone he's in.
Do you know what, though? You just don't have to worry about it nowadays because as soon as you sit up in the country, your phone, your watch, it all just automatically adjusts, so you don't really think about it, do you?
Yeah, but you do when you're speaking to people in another time zone.
In your home time zone, Steve, where you're from... You know, that's when you have to sort of make adjustments, you see?
Yeah. I don't think of others.
So just give us, before we get in stocks to share, Steve, what have you been doing? What kind of stuff have you been doing? Clubbing it or what?
No, we went to Cafe Mambo yesterday, the famous Cafe Mambo. Had some food and stuff there. It was a fairly early night last night.
Yeah, do you know, you're at the age of Steve, aren't you? I thought when the sunset sets, come on, lads, time to go to bed. Cafe Mambo, a cup of tea and a sandwich. It's not like a raving. They go for the cafe.
It wasn't actually far off that. I think a lot of people did leave after that.
I looked at your Instagram story. I have to say, it didn't look like people were having that much fun. Just people stood around.
To be fair, I was a little bit hungover yesterday. It was their first day the day before, so they went in a bit hard on the first day. So it was a slightly more chill day yesterday.
Well, Steve, if anything else, right, you've got a new profile pic out of it, haven't you? I saw that. I love that. A massive picture on Facebook. New profile picture. He fancies himself there, very smart looking, sunglasses on, hair brushed nicely, a little tan.
Yeah. Wow.
Is that going on all the social profiles, Steve? Like Tinder, Grindr, all those?
Yep, absolutely.
That's a definite winner there. Okay, go on.
That's quite a shirt as well you're wearing there, Steve.
Thank you.
Is that splattered with paint or?
Yes.
Interesting.
It's certainly right. Flat.
Do you not like it?
It's a bit of a visual thing for a podcast. So anyway, let's crack on.
There you go.
Right.
It's certainly flowery. Okay.
Flowery.
Right. Yeah, all right. Marvelous stuff. Let's get on some stocks. Anything this week, boys? Anything you've seen? Anything interesting? I gotta say, let me just say one thing. I've been looking at the chart of Bidstack, right, very carefully. And of course, you have a sell-off, consolidates come round, the sellers dry up, the little traders, the people top slicing, all that stuff. It's all kicking off in Steve's hotel now. It's a crazy time.
Steve, your adult-only hotel sounds like it's got quite a few kids in it.
Yeah.
No, that's adults.
Oh, they've just got a mental age of children, have they? Okay.
Sorry, yes, Bidstack.
Yeah. Bidstack. And the RSI has cooled down. It's gone below 50. And now today on Friday, it's popping back above 50. It's had three up days. And I tweeted out a thing earlier on saying, have a look at the last couple of times when Bidstack has dropped below 50 in the RSI. Then it's had three up days and the RSI has popped above 50. And literally, it's had momentous moves. I do think we're coming into a bit of news here. We are in Q3. James came on the podcast. I know it's early Q3. Q3 is next week, of course, starts. But he did say in Q3, we will have some news out and putting things in place, and Q4 will go crazy. Now, I think people missed something this week. Did you see that bit of Lumen research they had?
Yeah, I did.
Steve, did you read about that? Take us through it.
No. I don't even know what the Lumen research is. What was that?
That's ironically, it's
something to do with the sun.
Well, Lumen is that light and stuff. It's scientific. It's a company that does. They look at the positioning of your eye on the screen for adverts and stuff. Independent research, massive clients. From BT to British Gas, all these big clients, Co-op, Tesco's have all used this company, and Bidstack use it for their native in-game advertising. And they discovered that their native in-game advertising was more effective than banner ads or pop-ups, because essentially people don't want those in a game. So in some cases, twice as effective. Now, let me just find something, right? And I don't think people... There was a bit of... there was an article written by a company on this, and it's by Martech Series Marketing. It's a marketing sort of website, all right? And it talked about this, and it had James in there, had all the stuff that's in the RNS that Bidstack released, or the RNSR. And at the end, at the bottom there, right, it said one company featured in the research was publishing group Penguin Random House, which is a big company, Penguin, one of the big publishers. Alice Murphy Pyle, senior, look, she's got even double barrel name, Alice Murphy Pyle, senior marketing manager, Penguin Random House, commented, "We are pleased to see how well our ads performed in the study. We worked with Bidstack to promote three new releases and found it innovative and eye-catching way to interact with a younger, predominantly male audience. Reaching 20-somethings who might not visit bookshops can be a challenge, but gaming offers a fantastic route to engage with a group exactly where they are currently spending their leisure time." This is exactly... This validates completely a big company trying to, engage with this group of people, this demographic that they can't engage with. They can't get access to them, And this is spot on. A big company validating bids. The research validates it, and the case study by a big company. I think people are not seeing the significance of this. It's massive, I believe. This, because what James is saying, they are creating a new net new ad category, completely new. There's no one doing this. A programmatic ad category linked up, in-game. And like I said, James did say it, and people thought, it's a bit of hype there. But he says, what we're creating right now, there will be businesses starting, or when we create the sector, that will exist in a couple of years' time that don't exist now just because of us, because we set up this ad category. There's lots of money in ad, there's lots of money in gaming. You bring those two worlds together, it will be massive. And this is a company, already a big company, not a small tin pot company, testing Bidstack's tech and liking it, independent research, showing it works very well, better than traditional adverts. This is massive. I just genuinely think this is huge news.
Yeah. Well, I think people could probably have done what I did and scan that RNS and go, oh, that's good. Yeah, positive, lovely. I didn't get into that detail. So, yes, that's interesting. Wow.
Well, do you know what? I've often said, do your own research. And someone on YouTube asked me recently, what do you mean do your own research? And I say often...
Is it Steve?
Like Steve, yeah. Often, yeah, Steve's research, what's the ticker, of course. Often you have to go a bit further than that, Steve, and do a bit more legwork, but I often say, do a bit of research. It's just reading. Just reading a bit more. Now, you see, Bidstack tweeted out that. They tweeted out, anyone can go on Bidstack's Twitter account, or on LinkedIn, and they tweeted out that advert or that sort of article, so not an advert, an article, this marketing blog or whatever it is, marketing, what do you call them these days? Not a publication, is it? When it's just online.
I don't know, I haven't seen it. Is it a blog?
Well, it's a marketing website, you know, so insights into marketing, all that stuff. So it's all about programmatic advertising or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a website, basically, but marketing.
Okay.
So BidSack tweeted that out. Anyone can read that, you know, but just go on, just finish the article. That's all you need to do. It's only about, ten paragraphs, maybe. But you go in the bottom and you find a bit of gold there. That's all research is, just doing a bit more reading. Reading's free, you know, it's free to access the site. And that's what I love about investing. The majority of the sources, you know, is free. And so when people say to me, what do you mean about doing some research? I say, well, just go back and read, you know, the two or three last significant RNSs from a company, their releases. I don't mean sort of holdings, RNSs or stuff like that, or, you know, shares held by someone. But like the interims or the final results or trading updates or anything, you know, just go and read it and do a bit of reading. Now, I know Steve's got a problem with this because have you read a book yet in your life, Steve?
Yes, I have. I do find the RNS is very...
Can't remember the title.
No, I give him a book, right? I give him a book, and he said it was the first book he ever really got into, right? And I saw it on his bed, on the side of his bed there, his chest of drawers.
What did you do in my bedroom?
Well, exactly. And turns out he was halfway through it, and he says it's the first book I've ever read. He didn't even read it. Did you see? Did you finish it?
No, it coloured most of it in.
I got about halfway through and gave up on it.
Yeah, so, but even that, the most compelling read he's ever experienced, he managed to get halfway through.
I did read the Da Vinci Code. I did get all the way through that.
Did you? I suppose that helped Dan Brown.
See, we're talking about non-fiction.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
But I just want to say, I think that's hugely significant. A massive company like Penguin Random Health saying... They loved the campaign, essentially. The campaign really worked for them.
Yeah.
It accessed their demographic they never accessed before. And that's a big company. They're not the first company to be doing this, by the way. And I believe the results of that research BidSack's been doing have now... And James has said this. Because they're creating this new ad category, they have to get validation, independent validation, that it works as effectively as standard ads on the internet, you know, online. And not only does it work as well, it works better than them. So it's like... This is opening the door to millions, if not billions of pounds worth of revenue. Not for BidSack, but the entire section this is going to create. So you know, the hype and hope behind this company is completely validated. And in fact, someone said to me today, don't you think the market cap of BidSack is a little bit high? And what I said, well, I'm going to try and get it. I said, compared to where it could be, no. If you research the market and the potential, one of the biggest growing, hottest markets where the biggest players in the world are competing aggressively to get some land here, and put into that the fact that bids are creating a new ad category, you watch. I think this is just the start. I really do think. I still think it's one of the most exciting companies around that we've seen in a long time. And people are going, but look at the market cap. You're looking at, it just drives me insane. You're not looking at what could be here, you know? And
it does look a bit inflated. No. What I've done with BidStack after our podcast chat the other week was I did de-risk a little bit at like 35, 36p, but with the intention of actually doing a bit of dirty trading and putting that money back in a bit lower down and increasing my holding.
Yeah. So, did you do that before it went back up?
Well, wait, Steve, wait.
It's up 10%, Steve.
I know, exactly. I know. So I'm doing the classic. Well, I was looking at the chart and doing an amateur bit of an analysis and going, well, you know, around the 26p mark or 25, 26 would be nice if it just came back into where there was originally some resistance there, wasn't there? Okay. So that sort of becomes support, doesn't it? Yeah. But it hasn't quite got down to that. And yeah, of course, it started to tick back up again. But I'm still below where I sold my little chunk. So, you know, I could go back in now, couldn't I? But... I'm asking is your advice. You were saying you shouldn't have sold in the first place, but I have. So
No. I think if you are, you know, silly overexposed because the company's done very well, you've got to de-risk a little bit, you know, because you are in. It's always risk. It's still a new company, you know. Still lots of risk out there. So, and you know, you have to sort of, if you've got a risk tolerance there, you have to, you know, you've got to manage risk. That's where most people fail, private investors. They don't manage risk properly. They go overexposed in one company too much. It doesn't get play out. Because let's be honest, unless you've got quality filters and you know what kind of companies you're buying into, people go overboard in oil and gas and really high risk stocks that are doing drills and 1 in 10 chance of success, and then they just blow their account up. And so you've got to manage risk properly, you know. Is a test for you, Steve. Have you got any shares in Open Orphan?
Not, no.
What about Venn Life Sciences?
No.
Oh, okay.
Haven't you?
Venn.
Yeah. Venn, yes.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I said then. Yes, right. I am, yeah.
You said then. Then? Then?
Then?
What about then? Ben. What about right. then? What about then? You got shares in then?
Then.
So you got shares in Venn, but you don't have shares in Open Orphan.
Are you sure? I mean, you've been away, but you're surely aware of what's happened this week for Venn, the AGM and everything.
No? Well, no, because I'm not following them, so...
No, but when you invested...
Did you buy in Venn, Steve? That's awesome. Yes. Steve, so you got some shares in Venn, but you haven't got any shares in Open Orphan.
Mm. Well, this is a trick question. Have I got them in there because I've got them in Venn?
Yes, Stephen! So, there was a general meeting, of course, on Thursday, which Venn changed its name to Open Orphan.
Righty-o.
So you've got shares in Open Orphan. Venn is now part of Open Orphan.
What do Open Orphan do, Steve?
Homeless children?
They open orphans. They open them up.
Right, that's it.
So, yeah, so essentially, what are orphan drugs? Orphan drugs, right, are drugs that are for the treatment of rare diseases. Now, for a long time, right, big pharma companies weren't interested in developing drugs, spending lots of money, you know, on drugs that didn't have a big market. But yet, the markets were, you know, decent size. There's about 30 million people in the EU area with rare diseases, you know. So there's a decent market, but not massive. You know, these companies, big pharma companies, you know, want big markets in one disease, you know. So what the government did, obviously pressure from different groups, they decided to offer financial incentives. And now the open orphan market is booming. There's like, I think 58% or over 50% of drugs approved by the FDA in America are orphan designated drugs. So you get a quicker route to market. So not only financial incentives involved, but regulatory advantages. Like, the trials didn't have to be as big. They weren't as costly, all that stuff. So it's booming. Now, in America, the market's quite easy. You get FDA approval. And it's not very complex, as it's done. In the EU, it's 28 different countries, and there's different regulatory sort of approvals in each, basically, on reimbursement. Now, what the guys at Open Orphan can do, they're going to be a services company to that area. Now, it's a massive market, a huge market. And I think 520 drugs have been passed in the US, only 180 in the EU. Obviously, the same diseases exist in both markets. So Cattell, who's a very clever guy, he's Cattell from Ireland, he is, and he's been in 3 IPOs before, done very well. He has an ambition to take this company to 50 million market cap initially, then 100, then he said it starts to get interesting. That's when the institutions come in. And I believe he'll do it. He's got like 2 million of his own money in this company. He raised funds, which is very impressive. He raised funds at double the share price. So, you know, look at all the small caps out there. They have to raise money at a discount, because essentially no one believes them, and they have to go to bucket shops for placings. He's done a placing with 3 institutions, double the share price for double the value, pretty much to raise 4.5 million when the value of the company is about 2 million. So phenomenal, amount of confidence in him and his strategy. But he intends to have essentially what he'll do is Venn itself had revenues of 14 million. They only made a 1.1 million loss. So that's valued alone. That underpins the valuation of Open Orphan alone. And then with Open Orphan, they're going to bolt on some companies here. So one in the summer, one by the end of the year. Apparently, they've got a very big non-exec coming on who's done this kind of thing before and turned the company into a billion-dollar company. And then they've got 2 data avenues, a genetics data sort of platform. And what's the other one? Oh, just a database for orphan drugs, around about 400 or 4,000, sort of a massive database. So it's a services company, high revenue, high margins, over 25% margins, net margins, and big ambitions. And I like it a lot of skin in the game. Cat has done it before. I really like it. It's very under the radar. It's changed the name on Friday, and I think it'll go far. I think it'll do very well. Also, did you take any stock in I did a video on Polarian. Did you take any stock in that?
No, I did. I haven't actually watched that video either. Terrible of me.
Oh, Stephen, did you watch it? I can count on you.
Normally I would, but obviously I've been away, so no.
Just this one again. Just this video again. I like the one last week.
It's always the one you ask me about. I watch all the others.
Well, I ask you every week and you don't watch them. But check that out. It's a very interesting thing. This is, again, right, the founder, it was a guy called Bastien, has 12%. Mm. The CEO has just over 2%. I spoke to him on the podcast twice now. No, in fact, once, but I had a guy from the brokers come on to talk about them. So they do, it's very clever, they bought off GE. Now, GE is a massive company, they do scanners, GE and all that stuff. And the two biggest scanner producers, MRI scanner producers, are Siemens and GE. But years back, Bastien bought this patented technology off GE. I don't know why they sold it. They've got 32 patents around this. And what I did, my son has got a lung condition, right? I didn't realize how inaccessible lungs are, not just to get into them, but even get images of them properly. MRIs don't cut the mustard, you know, and they don't really use MRIs that well. They use a course called scintigraphy, but that's radiation based. It's not very good. It's 40 years old technology. Now, Polarian had this system where they polarize or hyperpolarize xenon gas, which is a stable gas. It's harmless. We breathe it in as we do anyway in normal life. I think we breathe about 1 kilogram a year of this gas through a normal environment. But they hyperpolarize it. They treat it in some way. I don't know what they do to it. But basically, then, what you do, they put in these little bags. A patient will then inhale this gas before they go for an MRI scan. They'll hold their breath for 10 seconds, and it amplifies. Hey, stop that. Who's moving?
Steve.
It's not me.
Anyway, they inhale this gas, the patient, and it amplifies the signal by about 100,000 times. So the MRI scan can pick up the lung, you know, the shape, function, structure, everything. And they are having a phase 3 test at the moment. Phase 3 is clinical trials. But all they have to do, the reason why is their machine has to go against the old machine. And they're testing 80 patients, and already it's getting better results. They've got 24 of these machines anyway, or additions to the MRI scanners, in research institutes around the world already. So they've got 80 patients, phase 3 trial, and all they have to prove is non-inferiority against this 40-year-old technology. It's nailed on, pretty much. It's the lowest risk clinical phase 3 trial you'll ever get, you know? And what I like about this, let me just open this up. It's not that the sales, first of all, the margins are very high on the machine sales. But it's not the machine sales that's quite compelling. Let me just open up my document. I'll tell you why. So the gas alone, let me go through the thing. This is very, so the gas alone, look at this. So one machine is the RF coils that you fit onto the MRI. So they add to an MRI scanner. So one of these coils costs 285,000, right? That's a profit they get. It's 470 grand now. But one of these coils, so they sell a coil, they get 285 grand. But obviously there's a one-off, so the hospitals want to buy these once a week kind of thing. Now, the doses of these on gas, right, they're $240 per dose. So every time a patient has one of these, breathes in, they get $240. $170 of that is profit. Service contract per annum on each one of these, they get $20,000 profit, gross margin of 50%. And application software updates, 45 grand. Per year. So essentially they'll make a profit of, if they say, let's say there's 100 of these, there's 35,000 basically MRI scanners in the world, but even if they target the top 100 in the US, all right, they'll make $28.5 million profit on the machines. The gas, which is recurring, one scan per day, let's say, in these hospitals, that would equate to $6.18 million per profit per annum just on the gas alone. So that's, you know, every time someone has a scan, that happens. Service contracts, they'd make $2 million on 100 of these MRIs just in America. They've already got 24 out there. Software updates, they make $4.5 million. So they make £12.7 million profit per annum, you know, recurring just on service contracts, gas, and software updates. This is not including the sales from the machines.
And their market cap is 22 million right now.
Market's at 22 million. There's a couple of issues. They probably need to raise money. But I think they'll raise money after the phase three trials are going to be completing now in this quarter, like quarter three, which we're coming into quarter three. I think they'll raise off the back of a successful announcement on that. But they've also, one of their biggest shareholders is called Amphion, which is an investor. But they're having money trouble. So I think there's opportunity here. If the shares get sold down, because they've just announced, AMP is the company that holds 18% of the stock, they'll have to sell their stock. So I think there'll be weakness in the share price. So it's worth just keeping this on the watch list. I think there'll be opportunity to get in here. But essentially, as soon as they get phase three, that means they could commercialize that tech in the US. They've already got 24 machines out there. They can start charging proper money then in hospitals when people use these. At the moment, they're only being used for research purposes. That means they can't charge full commercial rates. But I think a very interesting story to look at. Definitely one to put on your watch list is POLX. And just unbelievable how this kind of tech's out there. And if you look at my video, you can see the differences in images between the old tech they're going up against in this phase three and their tech. And it's just miles apart, you know? And it's a phenomenal bit of kit. Like I said, it's doing a good thing for society, you know? And decent stuff. So I think worth looking at. Definitely worth looking at. Anything else worth looking at? I quite like...
Can I just say, that whole monologue there, I was just imagining Steve sat in Ibiza, staring blankly at a wall or a beach, trying to understand what medical imaging is all about. Or perhaps not. Steve, talk us through it.
Well, in a way, it was my environment makes it easier to understand quite a lot of the environment.
Does it? Why, Steve? Explain, please.
I'm actually currently lying in my bed at the moment.
Lying in your bed? Where's everyone else?
Well, they're up by the pool.
Okay. All right, marvellous. Anything else? I do quite like at the moment. I like the guys from Emotion Group, IMMO. I don't know. In fact, look, what's the latest video? They've got lots of news coming out, and they're building the business. Again, all the companies I'm looking to acquire now, shares of, and in my portfolio, the board and CEO have to have skin in the game, you know? The difference between being an owner and being a high-paid manager. And like I said, when you get CEOs that are basically high-paid managers with no skin in the game, don't trust them. They don't play. They don't work as hard. You know, it's not their business, pretty much. Somebody else's. They're managing it. You know, and they'll go to another job if they get a better deal. But when you get owners with skin in the game, like I said, you know, it's like Steve's at you with your business working hard there in Ibiza. Oh, in fact, yeah. And someone
dealing. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone just working for a company. You know, it's different, isn't it? You got your skin in the game. Anything else that's going on there? NFX. Do some news on North Uniformix. Polarin, SafeStay. Oh, Mighton Group was selling down on SafeStay, you know? Mighton Group hold a big chunk of shares. They're selling down. Now, someone said, why are they selling? Mighton Group has been in there from the start. If you look at the share price of SafeStay, you know, it's gone down, and now it's starting to bounce. But there's been very little liquidity. And these institutional investors, generally they don't invest in companies below 100 million market cap, maybe 50 million. That's a minimum they go. So once the share price starts dipping below this, they do want to get out. But if there's lack of liquidity, they can't. Now, the interest of late, where we've had, just look at the chart of SafeStay, and the volumes of late, Mighton has used that opportunity to get out, you know? And it's normally nothing, you know, invariably, every time I've seen institutions sell down, it is nothing to do with the company they hold. It's invariably an internal rule they have about, you know, not holding companies with a certain level, certain size, and they just get out. Regardless of the fundamental, improving fundamentals or the potential of the company, they just get out, and that's it. So don't worry about institutions selling. Sometimes it'll offer weakness, and if you've scaled in, it'll give you more opportunity to, you know, get a bit more stock. But I just can't see the problem here. You know, like I said, net assets now are above the valuation of the company. They're generating cash. They're generating profit end of this year. They've got 14 hostels. They're going to... they'll have 20 hostels this time for next year. You can basically add £1 million to the top line, you know, for every hostel with about 200 beds, and they'll be getting to 40 hostels. You know, Larry Lippman is behind this, the guy behind SafeStore. This went from nothing pretty much to a £1.3 billion company. You know, guys have skinned the game. It's run by decent business owners, And it's a good market, good product, and I think, you know, excellent. So don't be worried about institutions selling down. It's not, generally, it's not linked to the company at all. Nine times out of ten, it's got nothing to do with the company they invested in. They put the money in at the start. It's taken a long time to take off. That's the problem with Neil Woodford. So he gets in early, and like I say, you know, it takes a long time to prove the concept in a lot of these companies. The share price, in the meantime, just drifts and drifts and drifts and drifts. And in the end, they can't sell because they've got so much of the stock. When they're offered a bit, an out with a bit of liquidity, they get out, you know. And so I think this is good at 37 pence. I think I've topped up in this, I've got to say. I've topped up in Way Education as well. Come back a little bit, I topped up. So I like, because cash generative, and they're growing. I like it a lot. Yeah. Anything else, Steve? What time are you coming home? Are you there all weekend, or are you coming home?
No, I'm seeing you for a couple of days after the stag, so just kind of chillax a little bit after.
What, on your own?
No, there's a few of us staying.
Oh, okay. Have you found a new lady?
No, I haven't.
Are you still looking?
Well, you know, not massively.
Not massively, okay. All right.
Hand out some flyers and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Just also, Steve, for your business, which hands on the flies, that's my business there. I'm on Tinder as well, by the way. I've just updated my new profile picture.
Here I am with the glasses. Yeah.
In fact, I've got the same shirt on now as looking exactly the same as your profile pic.
What you see is what you get.
Yeah, it's all there. Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah, this is like a live Tinder photo.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Guys, I've got to go. Got things to do. Steve's got to get partying. Anything else worth chatting about or not? No.
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. All right, guys. Have a nice weekend, Steve. Play cool, guys. Yeah, check it out. Are you in clubbing tonight, Steve?
I know we're going to like a beach bar all day today, so it's like daytime.
Having a bit to eat, and then we're nipping home. Lovely. All right.
Have an early bird supper.
Thank you. Will do.
Right, as soon as that sun goes down in Cafe Mamba, it's time for our bed. Lovely. All right. See you, lads.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.